we're holding on Chaf Beis Amud Beis, four lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday about the Machloikas Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish. When we say the Torah says a person is chayav for fire that goes and causes damage in somebody else's property, what's the idea behind it? Like, what's the halachic theory behind why it should be? Is it, Rav Yochanan had said, Isha Mishum Chitza, the fact that a person is chayav for fire is in the same way as a person rechayav. He shot an arrow and then he's responsible for whatever is caused by that arrow flying and damaging things the same way when he starts a fire on his property and it spreads. On the other hand, Rish Lakish had said, Isha Mishum Mamonai, that fundamentally it's a matter of his mamon. The same way as a person is responsible if his shur or other kind of animal causes damage, the same way as he's responsible if his obstacle that he left in Rish Hasarabim causes damage or whatever, the same way the fire is his mamon, and therefore he's chayav for it. Tosfos actually pointed out at the beginning of the Sugya on Chaf Beis Amud Aleph, that both of them agree. It doesn't necessarily have to be, at least the way we're saying so far, it doesn't necessarily require that according to either of them, that the fire is his per se. In the case, according to Rabbi Yochanan's Isha Mishum Chitzav, would also be included, let's say, so he had coals in his house, and he was burning coals, and he wasn't careful to watch them, as we're going to talk about soon, for example, about a dog coming and taking some of them and causing a fire someplace else. Isha Mishum Mamoni would be, again, even if he lit a fire using somebody else's fire, he would still be, or even if he caused somebody else's property to be damaged by a fire that was started by somebody else, either way he'd be chayav. Rashi actually over there at the beginning of the Sugya also mentions a point. He says that Saka Daitach, we think to assume, at least for the beginning of the Sugya, that we're talking about a fire that belongs, that we begin by thinking that the nafkamina between them would be, what if the fire didn't belong to him? Rabbi Yochanan would be mechayev him, the same way as if you shoot somebody else's arrow, you're chayev. And Rish Lakish would say he's potter because it's not his mom. We're going to see now as we go through the end of the Sugya, it's not necessarily going to be like that. Anyway, so Omar Rava, Kro umasnisa mesayle le Rabbi Yochanan. So Rava says both a potter and a braisa both support Rabbi Yochanan's understanding that Isha Mishum Chitza. Kra, what's the pasuk that says this? Dichtiv, the pasuk, how does the pasuk describe the nezek of fire? He says a ish, when a fire goes out. Now, the goes out implies takes a me'atma, the fire goes out on its own. So in other words, you lit a fire on your property and it went and caused damage. That shows that it's a matter of chitzav. So now we're not talking about, Rashi says that, for example, that you set somebody else's stack of grain on fire means you lit a fire in your property and it spread on its own. It went out on its own, and still the pasuk calls it the pasuk says the one who set the fire should pay, implying, in other words, that we're calling the one who started the fire hamavir. So not just if he actually lit it in the other person's property, but even he lit it in his own property and it ended up causing damage in the other person's property, we consider Isha Mishum Chitzav, we see it's the equivalent of shooting an arrow from his property into the other ones, and therefore he's chayev, and the pasuk calls him Hamavir, the one who made the fire. Shmamina Isha Mishum Chitzav, so that shows that Isha Mishum Chitzav.
Was it when you mean
a
little fire, like a bonfire?
No, a fire for any reason, a cooking fire, a bonfire, whatever kind of fire. You're responsible for making sure that there's enough. Later on, in the sixth parak of the Masechta, which is where mainly we're going to deal with these dinim, at the end of our Akonis, we're going to talk in much more detail about these dinim. Obviously, you can have a case, for example, where you lit a fire in your property, and then all of a sudden a hurricane came and blew it. You're not necessarily going to be chayav for that, because you couldn't have expected it. But yeah, we're talking about under normal circumstances. Yeah. Okay. Snisa, where do we see a braisa that talks about this? The Tanya, the braisa says, also on that pasuk, pasuk hakasuk v'nizge mamonai, the pasuk first starts talking about that the nezek was caused by his mamon, by saying kisei te'esh, implying that it went out and caused damage by itself, v'siyam v'nizge gufay, and it finished, it continues by calling him hamavir, the one who caused the fire, implying v'nalach isha mishum chitzav, so therefore the braisa spells out very clearly that isha mishum chitzav. So we have a braisa also that supports what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. the Bach actually points out, you know, when you get down to it, I mean, the Braise itself is basing itself on the Pasuk. So, so what's the chiddush of it? But, so the Bach explains, because since the Braise had said Pasuk HaKosim and Siyam HaKosim, so he explains, in other words, that, you shouldn't think there's a distinction, between when you lit the fire yourself, or whether it just started on your own. Either way, you're chayev. So the Braise, in other words, is giving us a little more detail than the pasuk. But anyway, both of them point out this idea of isha mishum chitzav, which, by the way, we touched on yesterday. The Muka Yosef brings up the point. He says that same concept would apply in other areas of halacha as well. So he says, in that case, then how can you light Shabbos candles, or how can you put up anything to cook before Shabbos? If isha mishum chitzav, according to Rabbi Yochanan, then it comes out, then it means that the fire burning on Shabbos, it should be considered as though you caused it to burn on Shabbos, and that's also. And he explains that, no, what it means is you have the original maise, the original action that you did, includes within it everything that comes out of it afterwards. So in this case, you lit it before Shabbos, it includes the fact that it's going to be burning on Shabbos, but it's not an actual maise that you did on Shabbos itself. Rather, in the case of Nezikin, we're saying because you shot the original arrow or lit the original fire, therefore you're responsible for everything that comes out of it afterwards. But here we're saying then the fact is the actual lighting itself was done before Shabbos, and therefore you're fine. In turn, Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank discusses in that case how that applies to lighting the menorah on Hanukkah when you light on Erev Shabbos of Hanukkah, because there you have the opposite. It has to be burning after Shkia. But after Shkia, it's already Shabbos. So then you have the opposite problem that if you say you're only looking at what he did originally, well, then you did it before Shabbos started, before the night of Hanukkah started, and then you can't be Yotzeh with it. And so he discusses that what the Nimukah Yosef means only in terms of Oynish, only in terms of punishment for the consequences do we look at the original thing. But as far as the fact is, it is continuing afterwards, and you can consider, therefore, the fact is it is burning into Hanukkah itself, and therefore it works. Anyway. Omar Rava, getting back to the Gemara, Omar Rava, Kashalei la'Abaya. Now, Abaya asked the following question. L'manda Omar Isha Mishum Chitzav. So, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the Isha Mishum Chitzav, that it's as if you shot an arrow. Now, we learned before in the Masechta, and again, we're going to learn in more detail at the end of the sixth parak, at the end of Akonis, when we discuss these dinim of fire, that there's a concept of Tomun. If you set a fire in your property and it ended up burning the other guy's property, you have, let's say, it burnt a stack of grain. Inside the stack, let's say, there were hidden other things. There might be farm tools hidden inside there. There might even be treasures hidden inside there, or whatever. You're potter for those things. The Gemara learns from Sukkim over there, that concept. So then, Abaya wondered, Lamanda Oma Isha Mishum Chitzav. If you say, according to Rabbi Yochanan, Isha Mishum Chitzav, then how would it ever be possible to be machayev a person? How would it ever be possible to speak of Tomun and to say that you're potter from Tomun? So why is that? What would be the problem? Rashi explains two possibilities. First of all, if we're saying it's mishum chitzav, it's considered that you yourself it's the equivalent of shooting an arrow. Well, adam mord la'olam, when a person himself calls the hezek, then he's chayev for everything. Doesn't matter, shergig, mazit, etc. So therefore, why would there be a difference whether the thing is tamun or not? If he had gone directly call and directly damaged somebody else's property and call, including tamun, he would be chayev. Why should we patter him in the case of fire? The other explanation Rashi says is, think about how an arrow causes damage. It goes into the person's body and it causes internal damage. If you're going to say you're potter by tamun by esh, then in effect you'd have to say the same thing. If a person shoots an arrow and it causes internal injuries to the other guy, he's going to be potter, and obviously you're not going to say that. V'nichale, and Rava continues, Abaya was able to answer the question that you're right. You wouldn't always say that he's potter for tamun. Rather, the case would be, suppose that there was a fire in one particular chotzer, but then there was a fence, there was a stone wall that separated that chotzer from the next one, and therefore, under normal circumstances, the fire would not have spread. The nafla geder shaloi machmas leika. Now what happened was that the wall fell down for reasons unrelated to the fire. Now, if it fell down for reasons related to the fire, obviously it would still be considered part of the same arrow, Rashi points out. But here, since it fell down for reasons unrelated to the fire, the holchavid likavid zikav chotzer acheres, now the fire spread and ended up causing damage in another chotzer, the hosim kolulei chitzav. So when he first lit the fire, it can be considered the arrows had stopped, in the sense that originally, under the circumstances that existed when the fire was first lit, then you would never have had it spread to the other chotzer in the first place. Only because in between the wall fell down, therefore that makes it possible to spread. That would be the case. Abaye says that would have to be the case where you're potter for tumim. Otherwise, if there was no wall there in the first place, or if it was a big enough fire that it could have jumped the wall in the first place, then yes, you would in fact be chayav for tumim. That was how Abaye learned it. So the Gemara asks you, Hochil in Golu Nami Kol Lechitzav. Well, by that logic, you should say not only the Tumim you should be potter for, then he should be potter for anything that happened over there. Then even the things that were uncovered, he ought to be potter for, because what's the difference? Either way, he created a fire that shouldn't have spread under normal circumstances anywhere. It ended up spreading because the wall fell down, so how could he be chayev in the first place? And the answer is, So the Gemara says, you're right. You can't really give that answer. Ella, rather you have to answer that no. There's nobody who holds that Isha Mishum Chitzav exclusively. If you say only Isha Mishum Chitzav, like we've been assuming all this time that Rabbi Yechon holds, this is according to Rashi. We'll talk about it afterwards, according to other Rishonim. But according to Rashi, or according to the Girsa of Rashi that we have in front of us, mind you, the Maharshal brings another Girsa in Rashi as well, but we'll get to that. Anyway, within Rashi, as we have it in front of us over here, what the Gemara is saying is over here now like this. All this time, we've been assuming that when Rabbi Yochanan says Isha Mishum Chitzav, he means only Mishum Chitzav. The problem with that now is, then again, you have this case where there was a wall in between, and then the wall fell down. Now we're going to answer no. Ella, rather, l'man de isle mishum chitzav isle nami mishum mamonai. Rabbi Yochanan, who holds that isha mishum chitzav, he also agrees, though, with Rish Lakish's point, that there is also a factor of mamonai involved as well. Which means, in other words, so like this, we started the sugya by saying we seem to have two different opinions, and according to Rabbi Yochanan, you'd be chayev even if the fire wasn't yours, because either way it's chitzav. According to the Shlokish, you'd be potter, because not mamonai. Now, actually, and we brought a bunch of cases, we brought a bunch of mishnayos, which seemed to not work according to the Shlokish, and he said we have to explain them in unusual ways in order to make the din work according to him. Now we're saying that actually Rabbi Yochanan himself would agree with Rish Lakish that you do have the factor of mamonai as well. So therefore, so that explains the case over here when we're talking about the wall fell down. So therefore, so you have to be chayav for the golri, because after all, it is mamonai, it is your fire. On the other hand, we can say there's the special patur of tamun over there, of things that are hidden, the same way as Tosfos points out, the same way as with all the other Ovis Nizikin. You always have distinction between one and the other. Some are only in Rishos HaNizik and not Rishos HaRabim. Some of them are only for things that it normally eats and not. And so therefore, it's reasonable enough to say that when it comes to fire, there can be a difference between tamun and not. If you say it's mishum mamonai, which therefore makes it similar to the other Nizikin. So he agrees also mishum mamonai, or chagoyin shaholei legodra v'legodra. So the scenario would be where he could have put back up the wall before the fire spreads, v'legodra, but he didn't actually do it, so fine, you can't make him chayev because of the original fire, but at least you can make him chayev because he wasn't careful to prevent his mamon from going out and doing hezek. So that would be, in other words, the case. You don't have isha mishum chitzav because the original arrow that he shot wouldn't have gone that far. But on the other hand, the fact is, you have now he had a responsibility to make sure that his mamon, his fire, doesn't go any further, and then ended up going further, and therefore you can be mechayev him on that ground. So, dehosim shurahu deletofach ba'apei. So, in effect, it's the equivalent of having a shur and not closing the door in front of it, and then the shur goes and causes damage. You can still be chayev for what the shur did, because, fine, you didn't create the shur in the first place, but you are responsible for seeing to it that the shur doesn't get out. The same way over here, you might be potter for having created the fire in the first place, but you can still be chayev for the fact that you didn't prevent the fire from spreading further. Well, the Gemara asks, well, if you're going to tell me then that Rabbi Yochanan, who holds of chitzav, also holds of mamonai, my benai. then you have to ask, what's the practical difference between Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish? If both of them agree on the concept of Mamonai, and just Rav Yochanan is also adding the matter of Chitzav, and Rish Lakish doesn't, then what's the difference between them? Meaning, in other words, specifically, Rashi explains, the question would have to specifically be, when the fire was his in the first place. When the fire wasn't his, then fine, you could say there's a difference because Rish Lakish would say, look, it's not Mamonai. But where it is his difference, where it is his fire, then what would there be, then what would there be the difference? And Rashi goes on to point out, the fact is, they obviously are arguing whether, they are arguing also when the fire belongs to him. So you could say, in other words, so Rashi explains, if we said until now that each one of them holds only one thing, only Chitzav or only Mamonai, then you would say, for example, we said after all, Rav Yochanan wouldn't hold this Mamonai, because Mamon has a Mamoshus, it has a substance to it, fire does not. So therefore you would say, so then let's say, for example, where it's not his Mamon and not his, or let's say where it is his mumen and not his chitzim, this example we just had of the wall that fell down, then until now we would have thought Rabbi Yochanan says he's potter. But now that we established Rabbi Yochanan says he's chayev on the grounds of chitzav as well, then what the mai benayhu? If the fire is his, then where's the practical difference? And the answer is, l'chayv ikar benayhu, l'chayv ba'avad var. The nafkamina between them would be, as far as what if the fire also injured somebody else in the other property, can he be chayev in the other four kinds of things? We know that a person who injures somebody else is chayev for up to five kinds of payments, nezek, tzar, ripu, shevas, varshas. Nezek we're already covering. The question is, what about the other four? Tzar, the pain that the guy suffered, ripu, the medical bills, shevas, the fact that he had to take off time from work. Boshas actually, it actually says doesn't really belong over here. We're really talking about four things. In other words, we're only talking nezek, tzar, ripu, and shevas, because boshas, as we're going to establish later on in the sector, actually we're going to learn it later on at the end of our parak, boshas you hire for only if you intended to cause the damage. So you intended to injure the other guy, and you did, then you chayev for boshas as well. If you did something inadvertently, you chayev for the other things, because other more loyalam, but you potter for boshas. So here, he didn't mean to end up, that his fire would end up going and burning the other guy's arm or something. So therefore, he's potter for boshas, but he'd be chayev for the four things. But only if we say, but here's the thing. If we say like Rav Yochanan, that Isha Mishum Chitzav and Mishum Mamonai, then we would say he's chayev for all four things. But if we say that it's only Mishum Mamonai, then no, because the same way as if your animal goes and causes and injures somebody else, you're only chayev for Nezik, you're not chayev for Tsar and the rest of them. The same way, if we say only Isha Mishum Mamonai, as Rish Lakish does, then you're only chayev for Mamon, and you're not chayev for the other things, unless you're not chayev for the other things. Now, Rashi goes on to add, the fact is, we had other naftaminis between Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish so far as well. For example, we had the case over there involving the camel and the load of flax, where we said, according to Rish Lakish, since the fire was not yours in the first place, it was the storekeeper's candle that he carelessly left outside, then therefore, we're not going to say, according to Rish Lakish, that the owner of the camel whose flax caused the fire to spread is going to be chayev unless he was standing there and the flax caused the whole building to set on fire. Not just in other words, be brushed by, and some of the flax started burning, and then he went away. Then Rish Lakish would say he's potter, because after that it's not Mamona, and Rish Lakish doesn't hold a chitzav. So Rashi says the Gemara could have mentioned that, but what we're saying is the Gemara wants to say over here, when the fire is his, we still want to say that there's a difference between them.
This
doesn't matter. Fire doesn't matter. Rishas Yachad, Rishas Rabim, as long as it's not your Rishos. Yeah. Rashi ends off by saying that Aval Loshen Rishon Nirali. Rashi says, I prefer the first Loshen. Now, there doesn't seem to be a first Loshen in Rashi over here. All we have over here is an explanation of Rashi saying that we're talking about that again, we're saying the Gemara has changed its mind and says Rav Yochanan holds of both Isha, of both Mamona and Chitzav, and that we're talking about that the Gemara wants to find an example where the fire belongs to him and still there's a nafkamina between them. The Maharshal brings in his sefer Yam Shol Shloima on this Masechta. He actually does bring from manuscript the first version of Rashi, where Rashi explained it differently. That in fact we are talking about that first the Gemara wanted to assume that we're talking about Davka, where the fire doesn't belong to him, and then the Gemara is ending up saying that we're saying that either way he's going to be tired. So you have two different lashonis in you have to hear. You have a lashon in Rashi that no, what it is sorry. According to the first Girsa, according to Rashi's original lashon, which apparently changed his mind and took out, which is why we don't have it in our Rashi, what it is Rabbi Yochanan is saying that it's only when he's only chayev when it's his fire. Hitaka would be potter if it's not his fire. If it's his fire, he's chayev in chitzav umamona, as the case may be, but not if it's not his fire. Whereas according to Rashi's second explanation, Rabbi Yochanan is going to be chayev regardless whether it was his fire or not. Then you have also. You have the Hagoris Hagra refers over here to the Rif and the Rambam, who explain similarly to who explain a little bit similar to that. They say that Rabbi Yochanan is saying only Mishum Chitzav, but they're saying in addition, if he made the fire in his own property, then he's also Chayev because of Mamonai. But in all cases, wherever he set the fire, no matter what, he's always going to be Chayev Mishum Chitzav. And they talk about in some detail here, the Gemara had said at the top of the Amud that you might be chayev and tomun ba'esh under some circumstances, but in practice we don't really have that. There's actually something in Minchas Yitzchak has an explanation about that. He says, why does Rav have to preface this by saying that Abaya asked the question? It seems an obvious question regardless. And he explains because Abaya only held it according to a particular shita of his that he holds later in the Masechta about where he set the fire in the first place, since the halacha is not like Abaya in that anyway, then it really is the whole thing is a non-issue. So therefore, you're potter for tamun regardless of where the fire was set. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Ala Harora Mishalim, we said that you had the case where a dog took a harora, which is a loaf of bread baked directly on the coals, and so you often have coals still stuck to it, and the dog grabbed the loaf and took it to somebody else's stack of grain and ate it over there, and meanwhile also the coals set the stack of grain on fire. Then we said, the Mishnah had said for the loaf of bread itself, the owner of the dog is Chayiv Nezek Shalim, for the stack of grain, his chayev chatzin nezek. A dog will eat almost anything, so therefore a harara is something perfectly normal for a dog to eat. You're right, if it was a cat, for example, then we might talk about that, like we talked about earlier in the parak, that's not necessarily normal, for certain animals won't normally eat things, but a dog will eat pretty much anything, which is probably why the Mishnah used an example of a dog in the first place. Anyway, so the Mishnah had said that you only pay chatzi nezek for the stack of grain, and we discussed two possible reasons why. Is it because it's tsroros, because it's not a direct damage from the animal, but rather indirect, from the koyach of the animal, so it's the equivalent of pebbles shooting out from under the animal's feet and causing damage? Or is it because it's mishuna? Is it because we said maybe we're talking about it's something unusual? For example, the dog brought the coal there in an unusual way, such as in its mouth. We had a shlokish understanding of that way, that we're talking about the dog threw the coal onto there, and therefore it would be, either it's tsurus or it's mishuna, and mishuna is like keren, and keren, you're paying only chatzi nezek the first few times. Okay. So we had that case. So the question is, man chayev, who are we saying is chayev for the burning of the stack of grain? Bal kelev, evidently the owner of the dog. The question is, really chayev nami bal gachelus? Why shouldn't the owner of the coal be chayev as well? After all, wasn't it careless of him to leave his door open and make it possible for a dog to come in and grab a coal from there and then go off and do damage with it? He should at least share in the responsibility. Actually, Tosfos points, in other words, not when we say b'lechayev bal gachelus, we don't mean he should be exclusively chayev. And in fact, Tosfos didn't have the word nami in the Gemara. We have it in our Gemara. Even though Tosfos explains, either way, it means the same thing. We're not saying the owner of the gachelus exclusively should be chayev. We mean that he should share in the responsibility for the damage with the dog, because both of them have a certain responsibility over here. Just like we said in the case of the camel with the flax and everything, where both of them share in the responsibility.
This oven wasn't a private house.
Yeah, because still you still have a responsibility to make. So that's actually Tosfos also points out that Tosfos has an interesting idea. You have to be more careful to avoid causing nezek to other people more than that you yourself shouldn't be the victim of nezek. because you have a responsibility. It is true. You could argue, I mean, what right does the dog have to come into my property? Nevertheless, though, you have to take care, at least close your door in such a way that it shouldn't be so easy, as the Gemara is going to talk about soon, that the dog conceivably could dig in the ground under the door and tunnel its way in. You're not chayiv to that extent, as we're going to say in the Gemara in a second, but at least you're responsible to close your door and make sure that's not so easily accessible to the dog. So you have to be more careful. Tosfos says, yesh la'odim, di yosef yesh la'odim, li zor atzma, shela yazik acherim. A person has to be more careful to not cause nezik to others, mishelo yuzak, more than he has to be careful that he himself shouldn't have nezik done to him. So that's what the Gemara is asking, that why shouldn't he be responsible at least for part of it as well? And the answer is, b'shishimer gachalto. We're talking about where he watched his, call. He did close his door. He did have it in a way that it wasn't that it shouldn't be that easy for the dog to get to. Then have the dog get there in the first place. And the answer is b'shachosar. The answer is that the dog dug under the door and managed to get in. They had dirt floors then, so it's very easy for a dog to. It would be one thing, for example. Tosfos points out, if let's say the wall fell down, it could conceivably happen where the wall fell down. The owner of the dog knew about it, and the owner of the bread and the coals didn't yet. But come on, Tosfos says that would be an unusual situation. A much more likely situation is that the dog dug its way in.
Yeah, but that's not enough. I mean, you could reverse the responsibilities onto the owner and say the owner of the dog was irresponsible by letting the dog unsupervised or
well, that's
even...
That's what I'm saying. That's, I mean, why that's exactly the case. So because the one with the coal left his door open so that the dog could easily get to it, then we're saying both of them should have to share in the responsibility. To be exact, actually...
One second.
Slow down. The fact is, you have a responsibility to make sure that your mamon doesn't cause damage. And we just established Ishay is Mishum Chitzav and Mishum Mamon. So to that extent, you have a responsibility to make sure to take basic care, such as closing your door, to make sure that your gachelas, that your coal, is not taken and used to cause damage. And if it was, then you can be held responsible for a certain degree of that. To be exact, actually, Tosfos points out, the Gemara is going to point out in a few lines, that the case we're talking about over here is that the stack of grain itself belonged to the same person as owned the bread. Because otherwise, you don't have the sdei achar. That's a whole different
thing. Right, of course.
In a second. So really, in other words, you can't make him responsible to pay for his own haystack, for his own stack of grain. What it means is, in other words, you should say the owner of the dog should be chayev for only, in this case, we're saying he's only chayev for half the nezek in the first place, so he should only be chayev for the quarter. The other quarter really would be with the responsibility of whoever had the coals, and since that happens to be the same person as owns the stack of grain, then that's it. All the owner of the dog is paying as a quarter, and that's that. Why are we saying he's paying the full half? So again, the answer we're saying is that the owner of the coal did close his door. So he took the elementary precautions. Now, even though it is true that, as the Gemara is going to point out in a second, it is very easy for a dog to dig under a door, nevertheless though, we still say all he needs to do is take basic care. We're not expecting him to have super care of his gachelas. All he needs to do is just make sure that under normal circumstances it wouldn't spread. Normal circumstances includes leaving your door open with bread over there and a dog coming and getting it. So that's why we can be mechayev him if you left open his door.
But nevertheless, it's still a flawed argument, because how would the owner of the door know that at this specific time a dog would come and filter in and cause damage? It's impossible.
Because you have to realize there are dogs around the place all the time. We're not talking about.
Then you can say that about.
In those days, also.
Then you can say that about a horse. You can say that about a horse, about a snake, about any animal.
No, first of all, maybe in a place where they're common, where horses are more common, maybe. But the fact is, a dog can much more easily run in. Come on. So you have to take at least the most elementary precautions. So we're saying
The fact still remains that if the dog hadn't been there, whether the door was closed or not, there would be no damage. So
that
the primary responsibility,
though, the fact is, you have to realize that dogs are prevalent in this area, and therefore you should at least take the precaution of closing your door.
It depends on the dog. Maybe for a small dog, the door was closed. For a very big dog, Doberman, that the door was not strongly closed enough.
So maybe we're talking about whatever kind of dogs are prevalent in the area is what you have to do. Yeah, that's what we mean, though. In other words,
I think it's putting too much.
Whatever it is, whatever particular kind of precautions are necessary for the type of animals, for the type of dogs or whatever that you have in that area, are what you're expected to do.
You're expected to do it, but reasonably, not beyond, because we're saying any dog, the door has to be sustainable for any dog to break it.
No, that's not reasonable.
No.
We never said that. We said, he watched his call, meaning that he did the elementary precaution that is needed, the appropriate precaution. For example, he closed the door properly. So now, if now you have most of the dogs in town, or those little tiny ones that couldn't knock over a feather, and then all of a sudden you have one Doberman comes by and breaks down the door, fine, look, you can't hold the guy responsible for it. We're talking about that he takes the precautions that are appropriate for the kind of dogs that are around you. And one second.
I had an Alsatian dog, and an Alsatian dog is not a big dog, but he used to open the doors when they were closed. He just put himself on his 2 feet, and he pushed on the handle, and the door was open.
Appropriate precaution is necessary to keep the ordinary kind of dog from coming in is what we're talking about. Just a second. Avramosha, listen to the next line of the Gemara, and that may give you an answer, okay? From this that we see that the owner of the dog is chayev for nezek sholim, for at least part of the damage, namely for the loaf of bread. And we can learn from that, stam dlosis chasures hein etzokelev. A standard door is considered something that is normal and expected for a dog to try to dig underneath it and to get in. The point being, in other words, that if it weren't for that, we would have said that what the dog is doing is mishuna, and if it's mishuna, if it's unusual, then again, we're back to chati nezek. The fact that the Mishnah is telling us, you chayev nezek sholem for the loaf of bread, forget about for a moment the haystack, the stack of grain, is another matter, because there it's chati nezek because it's tzurus or whatever, but at least as far as the loaf of bread, the fact is the Mishnah had said, you chayev nezek sholem, why? We wouldn't say it's unusual for a dog to dig under a door, we would say it is very usual for a dog to dig under a door. Therefore, you can leave a chayev, the owner of the dog, nezek sholim. Now, this leads Tosfos to ask, in that case, then what are we talking about as far as telling the owner of the place that he should that he should be chayev for the dog coming in, regardless, the dog is often going to get in. One second. So let me finish. Actually, it's not really so much Tosfos that asks that question. It's really, Tosfos essentially asks the question that, look, if dogs normally dig under doors, then what good does it do? How can you say that closing the door is considered a proper shmira? And the answer is because you're guarding it the normal way. You're doing the expected normal thing. It is true that dogs often dig under, but nevertheless, you're not expected to do anything more than what the average person does. The average person closes their door, and therefore that's all the Chachamim can require you to do. We can't require you to do any more than that. For example, to start putting bolts or whatever on the door, because or to put metal plates under the door in case the dog might go tunneling in, you can't expect them to do to that extent. So therefore, but you can't expect them to do what is normal. And what is normal includes closing the door. One second. The Ravid adds another point as well, which is, after all, it is also true. The fact is the dog also has an owner who's responsible to make sure. So therefore, it's enough that the owner of the coals close the door, and we're not machayev him any more than that, because we're going to say, it's the responsibility of the owner of the dog to keep his dog from getting in.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
Okay, so that's what it is then. So there's your answer. Okay. Yeah.
Why were the dogs?
But I mean, the primary responsibility is still on the owner, because the owner should have prevented the dog from moving through the door, even if it was opened.
Well, if the owner is there, sure. But if he's not there, if he left a loaf of bread,
well, that's his fault.
Well, that's what we're saying. So then he's responsible to close the door. If he goes out and he's not even there and he left the door open, then that's what we're saying. No, as if you're referring to the owner of the dog, fine, he's responsible to make sure that his dog doesn't run around. But on the other hand, to a certain extent, it's also, we're going to talk about this a little more on Omer Beis, actually, as far as whose responsibility there is as far as nizikin of one party to the other. We're going to get more to that on Omer Beis, so wait. Okay, now the Gemara asks, the ochla hecha. Okay, now where did the dog eat this loaf of bread that will mechayev in nezek shalim? We've already learned many times, including earlier in our perek, that for shein, the normal way that an animal eats, you chayev only in reshus hanizek, only in the property, only when it's in the property of the one to whom the damage was caused. Now over here, on the face of it, we have three people. We have Reuven, the owner of the bread and the coals. We have Shimon, the owner of the dog. We have Levi, the owner of the stack of grain. So, what did the Mishnah say? That the dog took the loaf of bread and put it on the stack of grain and ate it and set it on fire. Well, then he's eating Reuven's bread on Levi's, he's eating Reuven's bread on Levi's stack of grain. That's not Birshas HaNizek. So that's what Gemara asks. The Ochla Hecha. Where exactly did the dog eat this bread? Ilema de Ochla be Godish da Alma. Did it go and eat it on top of Levi's stack of grain? The fact is, you need to have that it's v'sdei achar, it's in the property of the nizek in order to be chayev, and here it's not. So fine, we can talk about what you chayev as far as the stack of grain, but how can we make the owner of the dog chayev for eating the bread when it wasn't birshus nizek? And the answer is, loy tzricha, you're right, the case would have to be a permission of the ochla v'godish, the baal charara, where it ate it on a stack of grain that belonged to the owner of the bread itself. So therefore, it's not Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Reuven and Levi are the same person. The dog went and took Reuven's loaf of bread off the coals, with coals still attached to it. This is Shimon's dog, did that, went over to Reuven's own stack of grain, put it down over there, ate the bread, the coals set the stack on fire, there we can be Mechayev and Nezek Shalom for the bread.
So it is
B'stei Acha then, because then Reuven, the owner of the bread, is the same one who was also the owner of the haystack. So when the dog put down the bread over there on the stack of grain, it was B'stei Acha. It was on the property of the owner of the bread. B'stei Acha means, in other words, not his own property and not the property of a third party. If that's what we're saying, if Reuven were to take... If Reuven has food and Shimon's dog were to take it from there and eat it in Levi's property, not necessarily would he be chayev for that, because not b'sdei achar. It would have to be in the property of the one to whom it belongs. We're going to actually take that up in the Gemara now and we're going to discuss it. So Tosfos is going to discuss in connection with the next piece of Gemara. You might be mechayev him just for the fact that he took it, but here we're talking about that you chayev. He would be mechayev him for the fact that he ate. So the eating itself has to be birshus hanizek, and here it's not. So that's what we're saying. It has to be in the property of the actual owner of the stack of grain itself. With that said, there are rishonim who learn that you could conceivably still have that maybe the coals belong to somebody else. You could still have Reuven, Shimon, and Levi involved over here. The bread and the stack of grain belong to Reuven. The dog belongs to Shimon, and the coals that Reuven was using to bake his bread belong to Levi. You could have such a scenario, and then, you know, we could be talking about whether Levi bears any responsibility again, depending on whether he closed the door, as we just said. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says Tifshoit. Now, based on that, we should be able to prove something. We should be able to prove the mouth of a cow. If Reuven's cow goes and eats Shimon's property, kachatzar hanizek dom, then we should consider it like the chotzer of the nizek, and therefore we can consider it to be a place where he is chayev for shame. De'iv kachatzar hamazik domi, because the Gemara is saying, if you consider the inside of the mouth of the animal to be like the chotzer of the mazik, where after all, the animal belongs to him, the animal belongs to Reuven, so then you should say the inside of its mouth also belongs to Reuven. If that were the case, le malay, then he could say, my boy riftach b'puma de kalboy, what is your bread doing in my dog's mouth? Meaning, in other words, if the whole chiyuv of shein is only b'rishus hanizek, then it has to be that the mouth is not considered the reshus of the mazik, it has to be considered the reshus of the nizik. Now, Tosfos is bothered by a fairly obvious question, which is, we've had many Mishnayos already that have explained this point. We had Hashem Mu'edis, Lechol Aroi law. You have your animal goes into somebody else's property and eats something, and you're chayim for it. And the Gemara never had to take up the point over there about Pi Parah. and so forth. Later on, also when the Gemara discusses this point, they don't bring on Mishnah. So why not? Tosfos answers like this. If the animal takes something from the chotzer of the nizik and eats it someplace else, no question you're going to be chay. Because the chiyuv is not so much for the animal eating it, but rather the taking of it. Just the fact that the animal took it. So in the scenario we were just saying before, if Reuven has a chotzer with peiros in it, and Shimon's dog goes into there and takes peiros out of that chotzer and eats them in Rosh Hashanah, or eats them in Levi's property or whatever, no question you're going to be machay of Shimon for what his dog did. Because the very fact that it took it from there is something else. So that alone is reason to be machayim. What Tosfos discusses, the question really the Gemara is asking over here, what if we're really talking about a case, what if the animal couldn't have gotten it itself without somebody giving it to him? So say, for example, Tosfos says, say a cheder shirt of a cotton took the food from the chatzar ha-nizek and gave it to the dog. So now you can't be mechayev for the taking because it was a cheder shirt of a cotton who took it. You can't hold them responsible. If you're going to say that the inside of the dog's mouth is considered like chatzar hamazik, then the owner of the dog or whatever other kind of animal is going to be potter regardless because the taking you can't be mechayev for and the eating we would consider as chatzar hamazik. Only if we say that the inside of the dog's or other animal's mouth is considered like chatzar hanizik, then we can be mechayev for that. So it seems that we can prove that it must be like chatzar ha-nizek. Otherwise, you can say, what's your bread doing in my dog's mouth? Meaning not where the dog took the bread itself. But let's say, for example, in that kind of scenario, let's say where cheder shirt of a cotton gave it to him. In this particular case, Tosfos says, fine, we're in this particular case. The Mishnah described that the dog itself took the bread, but hypothetically, if somebody else who's not otherwise chayev were to give the bread to the dog, then maybe we could talk about that it's potter. So we would have to say, in order to be mechayev him, we would have to say the inside of the dog's mouth is still considered reshus ha-nizek.
What's chatzinezek?
Chatzinezek would be half-nezek, but we're not telling you. So diboy lahu. As in fact, the Bnei HaYeshiva had a question about just that. Do you say that the inside of the cow's mouth is considered like the chotzer of the nizek, and therefore you can be chayev there for what the animal ate? Or would we say, considered like the chotzer of the mazik, and therefore you'll be potter as usual that Shane is potter in Rishos HaNizek? And again, Tosfos stresses, we're not talking about where the animal itself took it in the first place, because then for sure you're chayev. We're talking about where, for whatever reason, you can't be chayev, where you can't be mechayev him for the taking. For example, a cheder shirt of a cotton, a goy would be another example that Tosfos brings. So what? What about a servant? A servant then, so a servant, actually, it's an interesting point. I mean, to a certain extent, we say that a servant is chayev, that a master is chayev for what his servant does, with nizikin actually not necessarily. Later on in the Masechta, the Gemara points out that we learned it earlier in the Masechta as well. Given that an Eved has das, a Mishnah at the end of your diet mentions that the Chachamim argued about this with the Tzedukim. The Tzedukim were arguing that yes, you should be chayev for the nizakin of your Eved. The Chachamim countered, given that your Eved has das, if you make the master chayev for the nizakin that the Eved causes, what's going to happen? The Eved is going to spite his master and go and cause tremendous amounts of nizakin and make his master chayev. So therefore, you can't be mechayev for that. What we learn later on in the Masechta is that the Eved is potter on a temporary basis. Right now, he has no nechassim to pay for him, therefore he's potter. If he ever gets freed and has nechassim of his own, then you're going to make him pay for all the nezakim that he did back when he was an Eved.
Doesn't matter which Eved or Kanani.
I'm talking about, when we say Eved in the Gemara, when we say Eved without qualification, we mean Eved Kanani, and Eved Ivri is a regular Yid like any other.
No,
we're saying both a goy has das. That's what we're saying. Oh, an Eved Kanani has das. That's the problem. In other words, you can't be mechayev. If an Eved Ivri causes damage, there's no question he's chayev to pay. If an Eved Kanani causes damage, in theory, we ought to have said that the owner of the Eved Kanani should pay. In practice, we can't do that because of that consideration. Therefore, the halacha is, we're not mechayev the master, we're mechayev the Eved, but it remains pending until he actually has nechassim of his own. Right now, as an Eved, he has no nechassim, mashakon Eved konar avay, so therefore we can't do anything.
He'll
never go free. Except by a goy, the goy doesn't belong to you, so it says there. What do you say?
He'll never go free.
He'll never go free, maybe. Okay. Fine. So Omer of Mori Breder of Kahana. Sorry, I skipped the line. So that was the question. Do you consider the mouth of the Parah being like Chatzar HaNizek or Chatzar HaMazikdom? So, the Chatzar HaMazikdom, so you have to ask, if you're going to say that the inside of the mouth is considered like Chatzar HaMazik, Shein Dechiyav Rahmana, Heichem Hashgachasla, then how are you ever being Mechayev, a person in the first place, for Shein? Mela, as Tosfos says, you can be Mechayev him for the fact that his animal took something, but the fact is the Torah is putting it in terms of it eating it. How could you possibly think that the inside of the mouth would be considered like Chatzar HaMazik? If it was, then you'd never be Chayev for the actual eating. You could have other examples. We learned at the beginning of the Masechta that every one of the Ovis Nizikin also has toldos. Well, we learned among the toldos of Shein, for example, the animal rubbed itself against the wall because of its pleasure, because it was itching, for example, and it wanted to rub itself against the wall. And in the course of doing that, it damaged the wall. The tins of Paris, or if it dirtied Paris by rolling around on them, for its hana. Again, it was itchy or it was whatever, it was hot and it wanted something something soft to roll around on, and it rolled around on Paris and ruined it. But maskifla mazutra. So therefore, so that you could have. Those are not inside the animal's mouth, so there's no question that that takes place in the property of the nizik, that it's going to be considered a shosan nizik. But maskifla mazutra, how could you say that those are considered part of Shein anyway? At the beginning of the Masechta, we discussed where do we know that the word uvir in the pasuk refers to Shein anyway? It never actually says the word Shein in the pasukim in Parashat Mishpatim. The Gemara explained, because since it says the word there uvir v'steacher, we have a pasuk in Malachim that says kasha yivair hagolol ad tumay, as the golol destroys until it's gone. We had a few explanations of what golol means over there. Golol means the teeth, because eventually they turn the food into waste, and golol means waste, or because golol means Rashi had given that was Rashi's second explanation. Rashi's first explanation, the word golol, is related to the word golah, as revealed, because sometimes the teeth are visible and sometimes not. Tosfos brought another point as well, that golol means marble, and the teeth are kind of like the consistency of marble. Whatever the case, the point is, the pasuk says the word kasha yivayr, that it destroys ad tumay, until it's gone. So therefore, Marzutra is pointing out, to be chayev for Shein, it would have to be something that was completely destroyed. If you have the animal rubbed against the wall, if not necessarily a complete destruction, if it dirtied the Paris by rolling around on them, they're not necessarily completely destroyed. How would that be Shein anyway? And the answer is Ravina Omar. Ravina says, as far as the wall, the shof tzalmi. You could have, for example, there were pictures on the wall, and while it was rubbing against the wall, it rubbed out the pictures completely. So that's ad tumay. And Rav Ashi Amar, Rav Ashi says, as far as the Paris, you could say to pasai pasui, that it stuck as it was rolling on the Paris, it stuck them into the mud, where now it's impossible to pick them out from there. Rashi actually gives two explanations. One, pasai pasui, as we have it over here, with the ayins, which mean like posab literally means to step on. So it means like stepped on them so hard that now they're buried in the mud and it's impossible to get them out. Rashi's second explanation is pasoi with an aleph, which means meloshim tifasu amunim, that they're completely gone. Rashi explains that, let's say, for example, it's rolling around and it spilled some liquid where now it's completely gone. There's no way of mopping it up. So either way, the point is, yes, you could have, that would be an example of Shein, which does not involve the inside of the animal's mouth and is also kalya kauna, the whole thing is completely gone. So the point is that we still have the question: is the inside of the animal's mouth considered like chatzar hamazik or not? Given that we said, that's what we said. On the one hand, the animal belongs to the person, so therefore maybe we should say it's considered the inside of the mouth. Maybe it's considered already the property of the mazik. On the other hand, we can say that. On the other hand, we're trying to find on the face of it that it would be very hard to find the case of shame being chayim.
Doesn't matter how big the mouth is.
Doesn't matter how big the mouth is, yeah. No, because the same way as in Hilchos Shabbos, for example, we say Yodish Aladim Chashuva Laikarba, that a person's hand is considered the equivalent of 4x4 Tvachim, because it's important to him. The same way, yeah, the animal's mouth, yeah. Okay, Toshma, so let's try to bring a proof from a case in Sanhedrin. The Mishnah says, we're actually going to have it later, we're actually going to have it tomorrow as well, on Chav Dalet Amud Beis, Bez Hashem. Shpisa Boyas HaKelev. If one person provoked a dog
to bite somebody else. So you have, again, three people involved over here. You have Reuben, Shimon, and Levi. Reuben owns a dog. Shimon provokes that dog and causes it to bite Levi. Or Shitza Baris HaNachash, or he did the same thing with a snake. Potter, then Shimon, who did that, is Potter from having to pay because he's only a grump. He only caused the damage indirectly.
Trying to stop it, but
no, he didn't try to stop it, but because the dog or the snake bites on its own. So man Potter, Mashasa Potter. When we say Potter, who is Potter? The one who provoked it. V'chaya balakelev. On the face of it, it means that the owner of the dog or the snake is going to be chayev because it's his dog or his snake that caused the hezek. The iamakachatzara mazik domi. Now, if you're going to say that the inside of the animal's mouth is considered like the chotzer of the mazik, leimalei, then shouldn't he have the right to say, my boy yodach b'pumul dekaboy, what is your hand doing in my dog's mouth? So, in other words, I wasn't responsible for this at all. Again, following what Tosfos was saying before, that after all, you know, I had nothing to do with the original thing. It is my dog, it is true, but I'm not the one who provoked it to bite you. Shimon is. So you can't be mechayev me for the provocation because I had nothing to do with that. So how can you be mechayev me for, if you're gonna say it's considered like chatzara nizek, then how can I be chayev for the animal biting? That would be Shane, and that would be when we're talking about a dog, which is normal for a dog to bite. And therefore, you have to have it on a leash. But in other words, we're saying so. But on the other hand, we're saying the fact is I had my dog on a leash. Let's say fine, but Shimon came over and started provoking the dog and getting it to bite you. So it's not my fault. You can't hold me responsible for it. So the Gemara answer is not necessarily. So wouldn't that prove, in other words, that no, we can say the inside of the dog's mouth is considered chatzar hanizek, and therefore that's reason enough for him to be chayev. Actually, Tosfos says what we would have to be talking about is that we'd have to be talking about where Shimon actually took Levi's hand and stuck it into the dog's mouth. Because if the dog took it on its own, then you do have Taka a reason to say that he should be potter. But here we're saying. Even so, we still seem to be saying that only the mashasa, only the one who actually provoked the dog is potter, implying that the owner of the dog is chayev. But why? Then he had really nothing to do with it.
What do you mean?
Because he had nothing to do with it. Because the dog wouldn't have even bitten. Not only did Shimon provoke the dog, but he actually grabbed Levi's hand and put it by the dog's mouth. So.
But why would he do that?
Why would he do that? Whatever. People are mean. But for whatever the reason, that's not important. Why? You have to, okay, here's a basic point you have to realize, Pinchas. Whenever we learn cases in the Gemara, we're not interested in knowing how it came about. We're not interested in knowing people's motivations, what they were thinking, why they did this. The fact is the case happened, and we need to deal with it. You want to deal with the motivation, you want to deal with the whole backstory, you can construct the whole backstory if you want. But for purposes of the halacha, we don't really care. I don't know if it ever happened. Doesn't matter whether it ever happened or not. You know what? Tomorrow's Tanya, Best Hashem, is going to talk about Lohovin Prote Halochas, to Lashkiti Klau. You have to consider what about the details of halochas that are very uncommon and may never ever happen. What is the value in learning them? What kind of Urdel, you know, we bringing down in learning them? And the Alter Rebbe discusses that point. So, yeah. So whether it ever happened in all of human history doesn't matter.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway. So the answer is Ema Potter Af Meshasa. The answer is no. You have to say, you could answer that no, the inside of the dog's mouth is considered Rishus HaMazik. And in fact, the answer would be when the Mishnah says that the Meshasa is Potter, it means not just the Meshasa, both of them, both he and the owner of the dog are also Potter. The Meshasa, the word of Shimon who provoked the dog is Potter because he's a Groma. And Reuven, the owner of the dog, is Potter because, like we're saying, maybe the inside of the dog's mouth is considered his Rishus. And therefore, he can say that if your hand was in there, that's your problem, that's not mine. Or another answer, you could say you're not talking about that the hand was inside the mouth when it got bitten. Rather, you're talking about that the dog stuck out its teeth and then bit the guy. So not by chomping down on him inside his mouth, but rather like by keeping his mouth wide open and scratching him with his teeth. Well, then there's no inside of the mouth. So then you can't talk about Rishus HaMazik. Okay, so no proof one way or the other from that case. In fact, Tosfos points out also the Gemara could have answered another answer as well that you could say, let's say the dog itself grabbed, having been provoked by Shimon, now the dog runs over to Levi and goes and grabs his arm and puts it in his mouth. So the Gemara could have answered that as well. But there you go. Toshna, let's try to bring another proof from another case in Sanhedrin. What if Shimon, instead of just provoking the snake, caused him to actually bite the other person? He actually took the snake's mouth and pressed it against the other guy's skin and caused the snake and then made the snake bite him. So then he's not just a groma anymore. Then he's actually a direct, then he causes the direct hezek. So now if that kills the other person, Rav Yehuda Machayev, Chacham poter him. Rav Yehuda says he's chayev for that, and the Chachamim will say he's still poter. The Omer of Achaba Yaakov, and Rav Achaba Yaakov explains there in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, why should he be poter in that case, according to the Chachamim. It's a Timtzi Loimar, when you analyze what they're saying, you'll realize the difference is, it's a matter of they're arguing what is the nature of a snake's bite. The divrei of Yehuda, eres nachash ben shinav u'omer. According to Yehuda, the venom is between the snake's teeth, meaning it comes out involuntarily. As soon as the snake puts its fangs into something, immediately the poison comes out without the snake even having to deliberately put it out there. So therefore, as soon as Shimon causes the fangs of the snake, pushes the fangs of the snake into Levi's arm, right away there, the poison comes out automatically. Therefore, Shimon is the one who actually killed him via dying, no different than if he had killed him any other way. So therefore, lefichach makish b'sayif. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is going to hold the one who caused the snake to bite him is going to be chayev hereg. There's two averus in the Torah for which a person is chayev hereg, and one of them is ritzicha, loy sirtzach. The person is chayev sayif, which is to have his head chopped off with a sword for that. The nachash potter. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda would say the owner of the snake is potter because the killing was done exclusively by Shimon and not the snake. In a sense, had nothing to do with it. In other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the snake is no different than, for example, if Shimon had taken an arrow and shot it at Levi or hit him with a sword or did any other kind of thing with an inanimate object. The snake is not doing anything over here that would cause any of the hezek. It's all being done by Shimon as soon as the fangs go in, immediately the poison comes out, therefore Shimon is the one completely chayev, and the owner of the snake, Reuben, is going to be potter. That's according to Rabbi Yehuda. L'divrei Chachamim, whereas according to the Chachamim, it's the other way around. Eretz nachash me'atzmei meki. According to them, the snake puts out the venom when it bites, meaning it consciously decides in its little snake brain that this thing that I'm biting is dangerous and needs to be, and I need to put out venom into it. Because that's how snakes think. I don't know. Lefichach nachash v'skila u'makish potter. Therefore, the Chachamim are going to say the snake is going to be chayev skila, because the same way as, for example, the same way as the Torah tells us that if your shur kills somebody, then the shur itself has to be given skila. And later on in the Masechta, we learn that that is true not only of a shur, but any other kind of animal, any behemah chayev oif. So yes, in this case, the snake caused somebody's death. And again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it didn't cause it because it was an automatic reflex. But according to the Chachamim, it's a conscious thing by the snake. So it's no different than the same way as an ox consciously goes and gores somebody. The same way here, the snake consciously went and envenomated this person and injected venom into him.
Whoever tried to kill Levi, it's not a snake.
Doesn't matter. Well, that's what we're saying. It's Shimon's snake. It's not Shimon's snake. It's Reuben's snake. Shimon was only the one. Shimon, therefore, was only the grum. So therefore, nachash v'skila or makish potter. So the snake is going to get skila, as happens with an animal that kills a person, and the makish, the shimon who caused it, that took the snake and then stuck the fangs into Levi, is going to be potter because he's only the grum.
He's more than a grumma,
but after all, the venom wouldn't have come out without the snake actually doing it. So he's a grumma. He put the person in position to be killed by the snake, but nevertheless, we can't be mechayev him. We can't be mechayev and miss it. Does he owe the balabas a new snake? Problem, maybe. I mean, maybe he could also argue it's grumma, maybe. I don't know. It's a good question. But,
he's saying that the
why cannot be mechayev mitzah?
One second. I have a motion.
The snake has a choice.
According to Harmon, the snake has a choice whether to put out the venom, whether to inject the venom.
We don't know.
But the fact is, though, since we don't know for sure, then you can't be machayev him. Yeah.
Take some force.
Okay. Yeah. What were you gonna say? I have a motion.
Why? If you put the snake in front of anyone and he knows the snake is lethal, why he's not chayev misa?
That's what we're saying, because according to the Chachamim, ultimately it's sort of, you could say it's up to the snake whether it's going to inject venom or not. So in the same way, for example, as the owner of a shur that caused damage, that killed a person, is going to be the shur itself is going to be given skila. The same way the snake over here has to be given skila. The same way as somebody else provoked the shur, you can't be mechayev him. The same way somebody else provoked the snake over here, or even put the fangs on the person, it still takes the snake's own volition to, according to the Chachamim, to decide to inject the venom, and therefore you can't be mechayev therefore you can't be mechayev shem. Now,
but
again,
it's absurd. I mean, how can you? It's indefensible, an argument like that. Any snake that you put in front of a person that is lethal is going to attack that person. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Apparently,
No. Not maybe not. A snake,
okay,
a venomous.
Okay, Avramosha?
No.
Avramosha?
No.
Stop right there.
No, it's not reasonable.
We don't say what's reasonable or what's not reasonable in the Gemara. We have the Gemara.
I'm saying what's reasonable to expect.
It's reasonable for us. We want to explain it further. We can explain it further. Right now, we're going to continue onward. If we want to discuss it later, we can discuss. If we want to discuss it later offline, we can do that. But now, we're going to continue on.
But Alexander, even if you want to continue, there's no escape to the fact that a cobra is going to attack a man, whether he's in front or on
the side. According to the Chachamim, the cobra has the choice whether to attack the man. That's what we're saying.
We're not saying
that Shimon is going to be caught completely. He's going to be chayev b'din Hashemayim. He's definitely going to be chayev in Hashem's eyes for what he did. But a beis din here on earth cannot necessarily kill him for that, because it's not a 100% guaranteed thing that the snake is going to inject its venom. Anyway,
and if a goy does that, it's the same effect?
If a goy does it, then maybe it would be the same effect. I don't know. It's a good question. Okay, anyway. So, getting back to the Gemara, the e amet pi poraka chatzara mazik domi, if you were going to tell me that that the inside of the mouth of the cow or any other animal is considered like chatzara mazik, le malay, then in this case also, why would we say that the snake gets skila? The owner of the snake can say, my boy yodosh, bokuma dechivoy, what is your hand doing in my snake's mouth? In other words, it's not my fault. It's the equivalent of you coming into my chotzer and my ox goring you, where you can't be mechayev me for that. You have no business being in my rishus. The same way, your hand had no business being in my rishus. And the answer is, the Gemara says, la'inish k'tol olayim minin. We're not talking about it as when it comes to misas based in, you can't say that, because it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter when it comes to misas, when it comes to matters involving misa, it doesn't really matter whose reshus it's in. Where do you get that distinction? The Tanya, as in fact we learn in a blaisa. If a person goes into somebody's chotzer without reshus, the nog chayshorish balabais, and the balabas's ox gores him, ummes, and the person who came in died, ashur b'skila ubayim p'turim min koifer, mina koifer. So the shur will get skila. The owner, even if the ox has already done this three times and therefore is moored, the owner is going to be potter from koifer. The Torah tells us that when a person's ox kills somebody else, if the ox was a moored, then the owner of the ox, not only does the ox get skila, which it gets even if it was a tam, but also the owner of the ox has to pay koifer, he has to pay a certain monetary compensation to the victim, or to the victim's heir, that is, because the victim himself is dead. We're going to talk about later in the masech that we touched on before, what is the nature of that koifer exactly. But anyway, the point is, that's what the Torah says. Here, the shur is getting skila, but the owner is potter from koifer. So why is that? Buy them to him and a koifer my time, or why are they potter from paying koifer? Do amalei b'rishusi my boys, because he can say, what are you doing in my rishus? So you could ask shurei nami, why can't he say as far as the shur as well? Leimalei my boys b'rishusi. Why can't he say, why should my shur be given skila? What were you doing in my rishus? If you hadn't come into my rishus in the first place, nothing would have happened. So ela le'initolo le'aninan. Obviously the answer is when it comes to misas based in, and in this case the misa of the shur, it doesn't matter whether it was b'rishusi or not. So therefore, yes, we can answer And it doesn't matter really whether we consider the inside of the snake's mouth to be Rishus HaNizik or Rishus HaMazik or anybody's Rishus. Either way, the snake is going to be getting skila according to Rabbi Yehuda, according to the Chachamim, not for the reasons that we discussed. But the point is that it's not a matter of it being the Rishus of the Rishus of the Mazik or the Rishus of the Nizik or anybody's Rishus, because as far as Misa, that doesn't matter. Only as far as Nizokin and Koifer and other such things does that kind of thing matter. Okay. So the Gemara leaves those. So the Gemara is kind of leaving the question open. But we're saying in the end, the poskim don't mention all these details about that it has to be, for example, specifically that it stuck out its teeth and scratched the person, or that somebody else put the hand in or whatever. In general, we're going to say the inside of the mouth is in fact considered like the chatzara is in fact considered like the chatzara nizek, and therefore that's reason enough to be mechayev. In the case of the loaf of bread and the stack of grain as well, there actually we do say attack has to be on the stack of grain belonging to the other guy in order for him to be chayev. More on this topic about nizikin and different kinds of properties. The Gemara says, "Hanhu izi de Beit Targu." There were goats of Beit Targu, which is the name of a family or the name of a place or something. Anyway, to have a mafsidilei l'Rav Yosef, they were damaging Rav Yosef's property. They were going in there and they were grazing where they weren't supposed to. So he tells Abaya, who was his Talmud, go tell the owner of these goats to keep them at bay, to keep them hidden away so they don't damage. Omalei, so Abaya says, I'm my Ezel, why should I bother going? What good is it going to do? De'iazilna, if I go, Amrilei, they're going to tell me, Ligder Maug Dirabare, that you, Rebbe, should be making a fence around your property. If you made a fence, the goats couldn't get in. So therefore, it's your responsibility to make sure that. Now, Rabbi Yosef does not actually answer that, which leads to the question, well, who is the halacha like? Rabbi Hananel says, given that Rabbi Yosef didn't answer Abaya, that would imply the halacha is in fact like Abaya, that yeah, you could say the Nizik has a responsibility to make sure that that his property is well protected, and that Nizik, and then if the animal gets in anyway, like we talked about on Amud Aleph, for example, as far as you close your door and the dog tunneled under or whatever, then we can talk about that the owner of the dog is chayav, but otherwise not. On the other hand, most Rishonim disagree with that and say that what Abaya is saying is just a dichui. He's like fobbing off. He doesn't want to go and have to deal with these people. So he made an excuse to Rabbi Yosef, but really that doesn't mean the halacha should be like that.
As a person responsible
to watch his own animals, yeah. So the Gemara asks, "V'e Godar, if you're going to say like Abaya's logic that you have to fence it in, Shane the Chiyav Rachmana Hechemashgachafla, then how do you ever have the case of Shane in the first place? After all, if the other guy didn't put up a fence, according to Abaya's logic, you'd be potter. And if there's a fence, then how is the animal getting in?" And the answer is, Kishachosra, first of all, yeah, the animal could dig underneath, like we said on Amud Aleph about the dog. Inami, nof gurda belelya. Or another possibility, the wall might fall down at night, and before the owner of the field found out about it and fixed it, the goats came in. Well, then that's what we're saying. So now the Nizik did what he could to guard things. Now it's completely the Mazik's fault. But you could argue, according to Abaya's Svara, if he didn't bother fixing the fence, or he didn't bother putting up a fence in the first place, then maybe tackle the owner of the goats would be potter. Again, according to Rabbeinu Hananel, the halacha is like that. According to Tosfos, and then the Tosfos quotes from the Rif, and most other Rishonim, it's not like that.
What about if he puts a fence 3 feet high? Is he also going to be responsible because the dog or the animal can jump over it?
Once again, we say with the kind of fence that would be expected in that area. Again, according to Tosfos,
but it can be a fence.
One second, stop a second. According to Tosfos and the Rif and so forth, it's not really relevant. Even if you put up no fence at all, the owner of the dog or goat or whatever is still going to be chayim. The question is only according to Abaya and according to Rabbi Hananel.
According to
Abaya, the answer would be you're expected to put up a fence of the kind, again, that's expected to protect against the normal kind of animals that are in this area. So yeah, if it's normally goats and dogs that are in this area, a three-foot fence might not be enough. If the only pets that people have around there are are turtles, then you can even put up a 1 foot fence.
Well, look, they had lions in Israel, so how tall has the fence got to be? I mean,
I don't know, but lions are hefker anyway. Unless somebody has a pet lion, as we talked about at the end of Perek Aleph, you don't have to put up a lion-proof fence because if you do, look, it's not like you have anybody to be teveya anyway. If a lion comes and if a wild lion comes into your property, that's your problem. You don't have anybody to be teveya.
But if he smashes it, I don't know, breaks it.
If he smashes it, again, whatever, you put up a fence of the normal kind.
What about cats?
Same thing, yeah. Same thing. So the Gemara continues. Machu is Rabbi Yosef, the Tamer Rabba. Rabbi Yosef made an announcement, or some say that Rabba made this announcement. Desalkin la'elo denachsin la'tachta. Both those who go higher, meaning who are traveling from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, and those who go below, meaning those who are traveling down from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, as we learned in Kiddushin, Eretz Yisrael gavoya mikol ha'aretz, says that Eretz Yisrael is higher than the other lands. We talk about whether that means gashmius or beruchnius, but whatever. So therefore, the expression of going to Eretz Yisrael is salkin, going up, just like nowadays they call it aliyah. And going, leaving Eretz Yisrael is called nachsin, it's called going down, like they talk about nowadays, yurida. So both groups should know the following din. Hani izi deshuka, goats of the market, meaning that you have, Rashi explains, you have butchers own goats, and they're holding on to them until market day. They don't want to just shech them any old time, because after all, they didn't have refrigeration then. The meat would spoil. They want to wait until market day when there's a large number of customers, and then they're more guaranteed to be able to sell all the meat. So therefore, they're keeping the goats alive until then. Now, the mafsidi, if those goats, meanwhile, while the butcher is keeping them around, if they cause, because they want, again, he wants to keep them around, so they can check them on market day. So if,
why does not have a proper stable?
Okay, listen, we're talking about, it would say exactly that. So we're saying he has a proper stable for them or whatever, but if, the mafsidi, if they cause damage, if they get out of the stable or whatever, then we warn the owner two or three times and we tell him that your goats are causing damage. Eat Sayas, if he listens and puts up a stronger fence or whatever, Sayas, then good, he listens and he can keep his goats until market day, no problem. But Eloi, if not, then we ourselves, if not, then we tell him, Tiv amasach of a kabel zuzach, sit by the butcher shop and get your money. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, we're going to tell him, you are required to shech these goats, even though it's not market day yet, even though you wanted to save them, because they're causing damage and you're not doing any, and anyway, you're going to be shechting them anyway. So all it is you're not completely losing them. You're losing that you don't have as many customers as you otherwise would have. But nevertheless, at this point, it's your responsibility. One second. Tosfos points out that now, even though the owner could say, okay, so my goats will cause damage, I'll pay for it. Don't make me shech my goats early and then I'm going to have a whole bunch of meat that I can't sell. We don't say that. The other person may not want to bother going to Beis Din. There may not be Edom or whatever. However, Tosfos says, if the goat is being kept, for example, for its milk or other examples like that, then the owner has a valid argument and he can say, you know what? Fine. The next time my goat causes damage, I'll do something about it. Right now, you can't be mechayev me now to go and shecht it because, after all, I'm not keeping it for shechita. I plan to keep it long term. It's one thing, in other words, that Tosfos is saying. It's one thing if anyway you're going to be shechting it 4 days from now, for example. So we tell him shecht it now and sell whatever you can now. But if it wasn't meant to be shechted at all, then Tosfos says you can't do that. On the other hand, the Rambam disagrees, and the Rambam formulates this halacha more generally. Any time that a person has goats or other animals that are regularly causing damage, and they warn him several times, and he doesn't do anything about it, then not only we make him shecht it, but Rambam formulates the halacha, the owner of the property can shecht the goat or whatever animal it is, and he can tell the owner, here, I've got meat for you, come get it, come pick it up. Because at this point, in other words, your animal has been causing damage, and you haven't been taking care of it, so therefore I'm taking things into my own hands. I'm not stealing it from you. I'm giving you back. I'm giving you the meat. But this way, your animal won't cause damage anymore. And then hopefully next time, the guy will learn to do better. Yeah.
But then what's the problem if he shechts it, puts it in the freezer?
Because they didn't have freezers in those days. Think about it. Yeah, nowadays, they have freezers.
Yeah, like, what did they restore?
They didn't. That's the point. When you shechted an animal, you needed buyers right away. Otherwise, it's going to spoil.
So what did they keep, like milk or anything?
They didn't keep milk for long term. Mostly, either you had things fresh, or they. For example, with meat, you could salt it. For example, that would keep it for a certain amount of time. Fine, but you're not going to salt a whole goat. As far as milk, you're right. They didn't keep milk very much. They turned into cheese or butter or other such things, which keep a little longer. As a matter of fact, it's worth mentioning in this connection. At one point, one fellow who used to regularly attend our shiur and has meanwhile moved on, he once pointed out an interesting thing. This may also explain the concept that we have among the Shev Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. You have a mitzvah to not eat Eivim and Achai. Of all the things, why would a person be tempted to eat Eivim and Achai that the Torah listed as one of the most seven important things for all of humanity? And he pointed out, because based on what we're saying, given that once you shecht an animal, you have to use the meat up as fast as possible before it spoils. Again, some of it you could smoke or salt or whatever and keep for a little while, but you're not going to do it very much of that. A person might be very tempted. If I have a farm animal and I want a piece of meat, why should I shecht the whole animal? I'll go cut off one piece of it and then I'll eat it, and the animal will remain alive afterwards and I'll have it. It'll be like a living refrigerator for the rest of it, kind of. And therefore, the Torah tells us you can't do that.
But isn't that we eat it live?
The animal is not to cut off a piece while the animal is alive and eat it. So therefore, so that's exactly it.
I was going to say about the dogs, why they're singing the dogs.
Yeah.
At this point, people had all these little chickens in the backyard to be able to lay
eggs and whatever, yeah.
Eggs, eggs, you want their calf, you want to. There was no 911 to call. There was nobody to call.
There's
no police. You had dogs that were your guard dogs.
That's a fair point. You would have dogs for guard dogs, for that matter, to watch your sheep and whatever. Well, yeah. It's true. So therefore, it must have been
guard dog.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Actually, it must have been very common to have dogs for those kinds of things, for guarding your things and your sheep or whatever. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah.
Why would they want to dig under?
Let's say, for example, because they smell good food inside. They smell that loaf of bread baking on the coals, and you know what? The Gemara also points out, by the way, in some places, many dogs, people didn't always regularly feed them. The pastures, I guess, meant there were lots of wild dogs, but even the domestic dogs, people didn't always bother feeding. Like, they'd feed them scraps or whatever. The Gemara has an expression in Shabbos that Hashem has Rachmanus on a dog because nobody has Rachmanus on it, and therefore Hashem makes that a dog takes 3 days to digest its food, so that this way, like, it gets them the maximum amount of satisfaction out of it because it may be a while before its next good meal. So, yeah. Worth mentioning in that connection also one last thing. The Chizkuni says an interesting word when they have the pasuk about tray for meat, like kelev tashlichu noisei, throw it to the dog. Why adapted the dog? So we know Rashi mentioned the famous things, the dog didn't bark in Mitzrayim, and this is their reward. The Chizkuni says another point as well related to what you're saying. People kept dogs as sheep dogs to watch their sheep. And then help fight off predators like wolves or whatever. So what would happen? Every so often, the dog falls down on the job for whatever reason, and a wolf manages to grab one of these sheep in the flock and maul it. So now the owner is likely to think to himself, you know what? I have this dead animal. Yeah, but why should I reward the dog with it? After all, the dog didn't do its job. Let me go. I'll go find something else to do with the animal. The Torah is telling us no. Realize that the dog all this time has been doing so much for you. Have a little hakaras hatov for it. Fine, this time it messed up, but still have hakaras hatov to it and give it this dead animal. And then in gratitude for all the good things that it did for you as your sheep dog all this time. Okay.
Okay.